today on Rockin' the Suburbs.
It's time to test our math skills.
What's the number of light years the Rolling Stones are from home, plus Jay-Z's problems, plus the nations in Jack White's army, plus the steps to give Leonard Skinnerd, plus the Spin Doctor's princes, plus the Wallflower's headlights?
That's easy, Jim. 2112.
All right, it's Tuesday. We're hanging out with the guys from Night Streets.
Yeah, it's been great.
Yeah.
Hey.
So good. The first one, we got so much more to talk about now. We talked moving pictures, and we're ready to go back in time.
Were you comfortable staying over last night?
It was perfect.
Accommodations were okay.
We just listened to Rush all night in the basement,
like
we're supposed to do.
Yeah, I liked it.
Yeah.
It was cool.
I hope we weren't cranking it too loud. Mm-hmm.
No, it was fine. Okay, it was fine.
You're fine. Very good.
The kids are used to it by now.
I'm sure they are.
Yeah. Okay, so this is Rockin' the Suburbs. I'm Jim Linehan.
Hey, I'm Patrick Foster.
And with us all this week, we have Bobby and Charles from the DC band Night Streets. And Bobby, we used to work with him at...
Yeah, we did.
At an old
good, man.
Day job that we used to have.
Right.
Not anymore. Things going okay, though?
Yeah.
Okay.
Totally.
You do some really cool video work that
I try.
People can watch online.
Yeah. You go over to usatoday.com and or whatever other platforms and search around for the video stuff that I work on in the day job.
Yes. It's amazing stuff, like 360 and all kinds of stuff you can do.
We did some 360 video for the podcast back in the day.
We did.
Yeah. And I'll tell you, folks, if you think you've never heard Night Streets, but you heard the old podcast, you've heard Night Streets.
Absolutely.
You guys are too good to us. In all seriousness, we were so stoked to become to do the theme song for the old podcast and kind of be taken under y'all's wing a little bit and be on the show every now and then. It's super awesome.
This week we're talking about Rush.
Yeah, we are.
Yeah,
it's one of your favorite bands. Would you say your favorite band or one of, or where do you put them in your?
My favorite band. We evolve in our lives and everything, but the so much your tastes broaden, but definitely the band, my favorite band that when I got into them, obsessed over, defined, life-defining band, I guess is what I'm trying to say.
Okay.
That's a good way of putting it.
Yeah.
And you, Charles?
Oh, yeah, definitely. And, top five. There's some bands that you just will never stop listening to, and Rush is one of them.
Yeah.
Is Rush the reason why Night Streets is a trio?
No. Yes. I don't know. Is it?
No.
No. It's, I would say it's the reason I play drums the way I do.
Okay.
And always try to be, as a drummer, that's the Rush is just in my blood as a musician and a huge part of why I got the bug to be a drummer for sure.
It's a huge part of why I'm always insecure as a musician.
Yeah, that too. Yeah. But you listen to them and you're just like, I give up.
You have a very different drum kit, though, than Neil Peart.
That's true. That's mostly limited by the size of my basement and my two kids' college funds.
We're not letting him get any more drums till he writes some lyrics for us.
Watch out, man. I'll go that route.
All right. So yesterday we talked about moving pictures.
Mm-hmm.
1981, and now we're going to take a step back and we're going to talk about the 2112 album, which came out in 1976. And mm-hmm. Bobby, you were telling us a little bit earlier that this was a extremely important album for Rush.
Yeah, I would say this was it was their make or break album in the history of Rush. This was the album that that set everything on its course for the band's career. Basically, the short story is it's their fourth album. It's their fourth album.
Fourth,
yeah.
And, third with Neil.
Right. So there, we're not...
clarify that a little.
We should talk about that.
Take a quick pause. We were talking about that earlier before we turn on the microphones. But yeah, I was a little bit misunderstood. So tell us about that first Rush album and how that all fits in the history.
Yeah, the first Rush album, just titled Rush, was with their original drummer, John Rutsey.
Right.
And we were talking about that a little earlier, and it sounds like a really awesome Led Zeppelin cover album with a bizarre vocalist.
An awesome album. It's, you know, it totally rips, but different band, obviously, with Neil Peart not being the drummer. But basically, John Rutsey left the band and Neil came on for the second album, Fly By Night. Killer album, amazing. This is sort of established the Rush sound.
Mm-hmm.
From there, they really went down the rabbit hole, like the prog rock rabbit hole, right? And this is where we start getting to 2112. It's just funny. You can tell they all came together as friends of science fiction and fantasy and music all together. And all of that manifested in their third album, Caress of Steel.
Enter the champion. Prince Bison appears to battle for freedom from chains of long years. The spell has been broken. The dark lands are bright. The wraith of the necromancer soars away in the night.
you know, Rush fans love it, but you can just imagine, if you go and listen to the album, you can imagine the look on the label's faces when the band that had previously delivered tidy little tunes like Fly By Night,
right,
delivered this album, Caress of Steel, which is like a huge prog rock, weird, like crazy album.
Yeah, it's not designed to sell records. No. The most accessible track is called Bastille Day.
Yeah. Yeah. And it's just way down the rabbit hole. So they were like on the thinnest device with the label. And it was clear that, you know, you guys got, we'll give you one more album. And then this is probably it. So Rush just said, you know, screw it. We're going to do the album we want to do. And 2112 was the result. And fans or whoever got the album, you know, the man with the red star, iconic, put it on. And this is what they heard.
Guys influenced by at the time? Were they just pulling the stuff out of thin air? What were the influences that led them to be able to make this kind of record at this time in their career?
That's a really good question. I'm not sure. I mean, they were listening to Cream. I know they loved Cream and Led Zeppelin, but yeah. I mean, I think the influences were whatever Neil was reading.
Right.
Interesting. Yeah.
It is really interesting. Like the musically, I think they, like you said, they were a little bit all over the map. But Neil just kind of being such like a forceful intellectual personality. I mean, this album 2112 is based on the novel Anthem by Ayn Rand. And Neil weaves this whole sort of his take on the story through a post-apocalyptic setting where a guy discovers an ancient artifact in a cave or whatever, which is a guitar. And the high priests are like, we're not having that, you know, and it's this whole reference to Anthem and the story there of individuality, you know, being killed. And so, you know, on the tune of the story that we were talking about, this album came out and it resonated and it was a huge hit. Musically, obviously, it totally kicks butt, right? But just everything about it, just the imagery, the music, everything, it was a huge hit. And it sort of freed Rush of the shackles of the label to the point where, like, from that then on in their career, they could just make whatever album they wanted to. And they had their fan base sort of built in at that point.
Yeah, what's beautiful about it, too, since you talked about how they were kind of up against the wall with their label, is that the story I heard, I think it was one of the documentaries I saw on them, is that, you know, the people, you know, their management went and basically told the label, okay, we'll get them to make a radio-ready album. So, you know, they knew they were kind of being subversive here, and then they wrote an album about a guy going up against these horrible, right, you know, the temples of Syrinx and these sort of anti-music futuristic bad guys, and it was their story.
So I have to think that Rush was influenced by The Who.
Oh, I would think so too.
I mean, when you think
they've mentioned
rock opera kind of stuff, mm-hmm, you know, these big, you know, sort of important, weighty, you know, sort of compositions. And then just musically, I mean, The Who is essentially a power trio, right? Yeah. And, you know, we talked yesterday about Alex Lifeson's guitar playing being sort of both lead and rhythm. I always think of Pete Townshend as being the master of that. I mean, come on, Keith Moon.
Yep. If he'd been sober, would he have sounded like Neil Peart?
maybe. But they had to be sort of kindred spirits in a way with the giant drum kits and everything and always wanting to, you know, to add more to it, right, and do all that. And then, you know, and Geddy Lee's bass lines, don't you think there's a lot, you know, that could be similar to John Entwistle, right?
Yeah.
So absolutely. There you go.
Great. Yeah, I didn't think of it that way. And as you were saying, Bobby, just this spark of inspiration coming from, you know, an unlikely source. But listen to the beginning of that album. It does feel like you're entering a whole world, right?
Oh, totally.
Right at the beginning. And you're like, wow.
And I want to tell the
listening
listeners.
Listening on headphones in 76, right?
That's what I was just going to say. I want to tell the listeners, if you weren't listening to this on headphones, go back and do that now, because you'll get a whole different experience and appreciation for that music.
And not to mention on vinyl.
Yeah,
I just exactly. I have the original on vinyl and was listening to it recently, actually. And just hearing it anew, you know, just when you really hear on vinyl that separation in tracks and there's the height of the musicianship in it. It's stunning.
So this came out in 76.
Yeah.
Right.
When did you get into Rush? This must have been an album that you went back and discovered a little bit later, right?
Yeah. Yeah. And I think like there's tons of Rush fans in that vein. Like everybody gets into them at a certain period in their lives, and it just, like for me, it was the early 90s. So in a period of Rush where a lot of people would say it was kind of like their inconsequential years, you know, the albums they were releasing at that time, Roll the Bones, Counterparts, Test for Echo. Those are the ones that are sort of overlooked as just like, you know, the Rush like early to mid 90s albums. but for me, those are super, super special. It's like I was in middle school and I discovered this band Rush, and that's what they were touring on at the time. And I love those albums. But yeah, then you like follow your own path back through the catalog one way or the other.
Right.
And that's where it gets super exciting. And I think, you know, at that point, and there's other bands like this too. Like I know the band Iron Maiden talks about this a lot. Like they're still at it and still doing amazing music. But they have this whole new crop of fans that are like discovering this discography. It's so cool.
That is cool.
And that's what a lot of Rush fans end up doing.
Yeah, I came in on Moving Pictures, I think, with a lot of other people.
Yeah.
We all joined at the same time. And it was exciting to go back and discover, like, oh, I got Fly By Night was the next album I got. And it was like, this is amazing. You know, it's a different sound, but they're just, you know, you dig back and you find nothing but goodness.
I think for most Rush fans, like 2112 is the, other than Moving Pictures, it's like the iconic Rush album.
Okay.
And for all these reasons we talked about, and like the artwork, the man, the star man, you know, artwork is kind of like the de facto Rush symbol. It also, you can't talk about Rush without talking about impeccable fashion. And 2112 is the best example of that with the band in kimonos.
I strongly agree. Yeah. Yeah.
And yeah, it's pretty amazing. The fashion.
They never really appeared on the front of their album covers, right?
Yeah.
You know, there was always some sort of planned piece of art. So talk about the importance of that. I mean, I think you were saying yesterday Moving Pictures worked on, oh, wait for it, three levels, right?
Yeah. I mean, the album covers, it's another element of the band that is just, it's part of it. It's all like, it's all very artistic. You're right. It was never kind of like an album cover with like the band photo in there in some way.
You know, 2112 and Moving Pictures especially too, they both have the pentagram featured. There's a sort of occult side to it that's scary and weird. What's weird is that you listen to their lyrics and they're polite and they say, you know, one must do this. You know, these things that like your mom says. And then, but there's also like witchcraft and scary stuff.
Yeah.
Well, you actually bring up another curious sort of point with Rush here, which is, where do they get categorized? Like, what kind of band are they? You mentioned prog. You'll see them on lists of like the greatest heavy metal bands, right? I mean, do you think of them as metal?
Not really. No. I think the great bands, and Rush is one of them, don't really fit into it. They are a genre of their own. And you can lump them in, you know, depending on the day with a lot of others. But they are their own.
Yeah. Yeah. But I guess loosely they would fall in that prog rock overall moniker, right? But you're right. Like every once in a while they'll creep into a heavy metal list.
Right.
It's interesting. But yeah, like
I guess hard rock would be the best.
Hard rock, prog rock. Yeah. You know,
just sort of overall umbrella.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And a hardworking band. I mean, they toured their asses off for how many years, right?
Right. 200, 300 nights a year. Just going all the time.
Which is amazing when you go back through their discography and like, how are they putting out an album a year?
They pretty much average like an album a year. It's amazing.
And, you know, not just dashing off little 3-minute pop songs, right? I mean, they're composing these, you know, really complex pieces of work and putting out all these records. It's really amazing.
I think, and one part of the answer there, I think, is because that's all they did, you know. And there's a really, in one of the documentaries, there's a really hilarious moment that always sticks with me from Gene Simmons of Kiss, right? And they toured with Kiss a lot. They were great friends.
Really?
But he shares this amazing story of on the road with Rush, and they're in some hotel. And it's like the college like girls gymnastics team is staying at the hotel that same night or something, and like they're all, you know, Gene Simmons and Kiss, we're all partying with them. And I walk past Rush's room and I look in, and like there's Neil reading a book, and you know there's the band just watching TV
practicing.
And, yeah, practicing. Right. It's like all they did.
Yeah, Rush was in it for the music.
Yeah,
Kiss made music to get to the other stuff.
I think so.
Being a rock star, right?
It should be noted too that despite the fact that they were touring with Kiss, they managed to produce this music that is complex.
That takes some real, real strength, internal fortitude.
It's just what they did always. Yeah. You know? Amazing. And they just threw this, you know, and 2112, like we said, was the album that, speaking in terms of music as a business, it's the album that cleared the path for them to be able to do that. And it's the album that their fans really, like that connection really was solidified.
So you mentioned this was sort of make or break record, and they did not deliver something that was like radio friendly. They basically, you know, recorded a record on their own terms.
They made the record they wanted to make.
And yet it was their second best selling album in the US. It ended up selling 3 million copies.
Yeah.
Captivated the fans.
Yeah.
You know, I'm one of those few people, I kind of enjoy the second side, actually.
The second side, that starts with track 2, is that right?
That is track 2. There is a second side.
All right, but this is track 3. Sounds a bit like The Clash.
If you want to win over a seventh grader, like write a song about a TV show he likes.
Yeah, good point.
Yeah, you know, just listen to that, Bobby. Like, listen to your origin story. It must have been the same thing if you're a teenager at the right age in 1976 and this came out. It just must have been a mass explosion of hormones that propelled this record.
Yeah, it's life. It defines your life.
Yeah.
You know, when it's the kind of band that there's so much in there. That if you hear it and it resonates with you, it is on a whole other level than most other things musically. It just frames your life from that point forward.
Okay, so what are we going to talk about tomorrow?
So tomorrow we are going to get, there's kind of a bridge to cross from this prog rock era into like the, I guess what you'd call kind of the classic like radio hits era.
Right.
Of Rush and Permanent Waves, which I always call my, it's my Desert Island album. Like it's, if I had to take one with me, mm-hmm. it'd be that one. And so we'll get into that.
That sounds great. We'll do that when?
Tomorrow.
Tomorrow.
Every day.
Every day.
When?
Yes. Very good. It's like a little button I push.
1984. What?
Okay, this is Rockin' the Suburbs. You can find us on all the big podcast platforms. And as Patrick mentioned, you can call us and you can tell us yes. what you think about Rush and share your Rush memories, probably with headphones
yeah.
in a basement in the suburbs, right?
Go to the phone booth on the corner, put a quarter in and call us.
Yes, that's a good way to go. The number... 612-440-1984. Okay. Or you can email us rock@suburbspod.com or you can converse with us via the social medias
yeah.
of Facebook, Twitter, Instagram at suburbspod on all of those.
Just don't subtweet us because we don't know what that is.
I don't know
and
what that is.
If you do it, we won't know.
We can ask our kids, right? They can yeah. explain it to us.
Kids!
My daughter's on Reddit. My daughter's on Reddit all the time. All right. And I guess that's about it. So, Permanent Waves tomorrow.
Yeah.
I'm excited about this.
It's going
to
be good.
That's a great record.
Yeah.
I got something to say.
All right.
Sweet.
Very good. I'm Jim Linehan.
I'm Patrick Foster.
Bobby Padovic.
Charles Andrews.
Thanks, guys, for hanging out with us.
Yeah.
And we'll talk to you guys and everyone tomorrow.
First song's 20 minutes.
But it's an LP, eh?